potential sponsors. My name is James Baca, also known as the Notorious Banker. I am the host, creator, and proprietor of the Notorious Banker Project. I am also a consumer advocate who helps customers solve complex financial issues. I would love to have you as a sponsor of my content. The Notorious Banker has a critically acclaimed podcast of the same name, listened to by 10,000 people an episode, and we also have a very active Twitter community with thousands of posts monthly, creating millions of impressions and engagement per month. Also, a burgeoning young adult fan base on TikTok at Notorious Banker with 5,700 loyal followers and growing. I am looking for a dedicated sponsor who will help my project grow and will also let me be a loyal advocate for your company or product. 13 years in a financial institution has given me sales skills, which will help me promote your company as I continue my journey into bettering financial lives. Ad packages are as affordable as $10 cost per mil, which includes cross promotion on my social media channels, podcasts, and any direct promotion desired by you. Please contact me at james@thenotoriousbanker.com or go to thenotoriousbanker.com/sponsorship for more details. Let's enlighten the amazing follower base of The Notorious Banker with your product, my podcast, and our goal to better our followers' financial lives. Thank you so much. Hey everyone, it's James and welcome to The Notorious Banker Podcast. 3,150 amazing followers at BankBetterGuy on Twitter, dozens more at patreon.com/notoriousbanker, where for as little as a $1 subscription, you could help me, the Notorious Banker, fight back against big banks, and 5,740 plus amazing followers on TikTok at Notorious Banker. Guys, once again, thank you so very much for your love and support. I really do appreciate it. Things are going good. I'm feeling a lot better. Of course, I had COVID last month, and I was sick for the better part of 3 weeks. Some things are still a little off. You know, I'm a very physical person. I like to lift weights. I'm a gym rat. And I go to the gym and I'm just feeling slightly off. It's a little bit harder for me to lift weights. It's a little bit harder for me to get my breathing right. And hell, I'll walk around the grocery store and I'll get winded. So there's still some things going on. And that includes recording this podcast. So there are times where I actually pause this podcast, take a deep breath, and continue on with my point. So if you hear some weird starts and stops, I do apologize about that, but I'm still trying to get my footing. And if you hear the little desk fan blowing in the background, well, I don't apologize about that. We are headed deep into fall here in New Mexico, but it is still 85 degrees outside, and still really hot in this podcast studio that I created for myself. You know, not a lot going on in the banking world. There were some things going on with Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, it was announced that their asset cap would not be removed. Long story short, that basically means that Wells Fargo is restricted to a certain amount of assets that they can have, and they cannot have one penny more than that number. Now, you know, here's the thing with that. A lot of people say, well, why does that matter? Well, any successful business wants to grow their business. You know what I mean? Any successful business wants to succeed at life. And part of that is growing your assets. You know, if you have rich customers, you want them to bring all of their money to your bank, not just a little bit of it. That was the thing whenever we had wealthy customers at Bank of America. They would say, oh, hey, you helped Mr. Buffett. And yeah, Warren Buffett didn't go into my office. So I'm just making an example here. You know, oh, you helped Mr. Buffett. Yeah, what did he open the account with? Well, he just did the minimum $25 deposit, and then your ass would get reamed because you're the salesperson, and you were supposed to bring his $100 billion fortune to Bank of America. Otherwise, you failed as a banker. And they'll say, do you really want this job? Do you really think you're capable of handling this job? Because it seems like you're not trying hard enough with Mr. Buffett or with your customers. That matters a lot to places like Wells Fargo because they, of course, want to grow their business. They want to grow their assets. They want to be a bigger, more powerful company. But, of course, the asset cap limitation really does hinder that growth. So, of course, one of the big things last summer with PPP loans was Wells Fargo claimed that they couldn't help as many people as they wanted to help with PPP loans because they were stuck under the asset cap, which I understood, and I was fine with that excuse, although it's not much of an excuse. They did ask for relief to get rid of the asset cap in order to, quote, help more people. But let's just call a spade here. They really didn't want to help the average customer. They really didn't want to help the lower to middle income business customer. That's not going to bring them a lot of revenue, a lot of assets. And those assets would be loans that they got through Wells Fargo, you know, whether it's PPP or EIDL or otherwise. So that was a big source of frustration, and people were like, well, why don't they want to give these? They're guaranteed by the government. They're forgivable and all that. Because it doesn't help anyone, because that customer who was barely struggling to hang on as a business is not going to come back for another loan after that's paid off or forgiven. They did that to survive, and they did that to just continue on with their fledgling business, and they don't really seek millions upon millions of dollars from Wells Fargo or whomever. So Wells Fargo says, well, that's too much work. It's too much hassle to let these people get a loan through us, and then what? We're stuck with these little useless loans, and we can't grow our portfolio because our portfolio can only grow by so much because of the asset cap. Well, with the Fed announcing that asset cap is no longer going to be there, this is my prediction. I really do believe Wells Fargo is going to accelerate the closure of a lot of branches in small to medium-sized cities. I think they're going to be exclusively a big city bank in the next 5 to 10 years. All these little tiny branches, like the one I grew up nearby in Magdalena, New Mexico, population 900, that one's already gone. That Wells Fargo's already gone. It became a local bank. They'll get rid of all those customers, those little ones who have little several $100 deposits, all these little clients that don't really mean anything. That way they can make some room, much like an NFL football team does with their salary cap. You cut a lot of people, you replace them with lower rookie clients, that way you have enough space to sign the one big key free agent. And that's what Wells Fargo is going to do. They're going to cut ties with a lot of small towns. They're going to force the hand of a lot of customers to choose another bank. That way they have this little room here to acquire some new customers that are higher end. And if and when that asset cap is removed, guess what? They're going to push to make sure that their assets grow along with their rich clients. That's exactly what's going to happen. And I see it coming from a mile away. And that's fine. If you want to be wealth management, if you want to be only helping rich people the way that I think Bank of America only wants to help rich people, then so be it. It's Wells Fargo's prerogative to want to do that, but the way that they're going to do that in the next several years is actually kind of scary. To just close branches in some of these towns, this is the only bank in that area. And so many people have to switch banks, switch banking. You know, a lot of these places like farm towns, you know, they'll have a big giant account with Wells Fargo, 100 employees all getting paychecks through Wells Fargo. Now everyone's going to have to make a decision to switch banks or have an inconvenient bank where they can only bank via the internet, and or they have to drive 100 miles to the nearest location. I mean, that's what's really going to happen. So it's going to be increasingly frustrating for people in small town USA as Wells Fargo is now trying to figure out how they're going to continue to function with this gigantic salary cap that they have there, or asset cap, if you will, not being able to grow. And with a $6 billion quarterly profit that they had in Q2, anxiously awaiting the Q3 quarterly profit in a few weeks, we know that they're thriving, and we know that they're already doing some moves in order to maximize their net income despite the asset cap. So believe me when I say that, yes, this is kind of a hindrance for Wells Fargo, but they're going to figure out a way to get what they want and screw over the little guy. I didn't want to do 30 minutes on that particular subject. I just wanted to get that out there because it was in the news. But today's topic is going to be a singular one, and it's going to be our friends at Evil Zelle and Bank of America. Of course, you know, if you've listened to this podcast, and there's over 160 of these podcasts, I've probably done 20 podcasts where I discussed how people were scammed through Zelle and how yours truly, the Notorious Banker, has recovered close to $500,000 in stolen Zelle money on behalf of the clients of Bank of America because of their inept claims department, their inept customer service. I help people push to get their money back. Now, I'm not in the media. I'm a podcaster. I'm a guy who has an opinion, who talks into a microphone that is nestled right above my bosom, okay? So I am not anyone of note yet. But I know how to get things done because as a 13-year former employee and former manager of Bank of America, I know the apathy that Bank of America has towards customers who are victimized by Zelle. I was at Bank of America when Zelle was introduced. The first few months I was there when Zelle was introduced, I saw how Zelle scams work, and I saw the apathy that my company, Bank of America, had for those customers. So, of course, when I left Bank of America, my vigilante customer service was hell-bent on one thing, proving that big banks do not give a shit about you, and proving that someone like yours truly, someone who was a lowly manager in small town America at a major company like Bank of America, can move mountains. I am capable of doing that because, you know, I wasn't a skilled banker when I walked into Bank of America in 2005, but I left that place with a particular set of skills that a lot of people don't have, and a particular understanding of the apathy and the disgusting customer service that a place like Bank of America has, especially when it comes to victims of fraud. There was a very interesting story out of San Francisco about a teacher that was scammed via Zelle and Bank of America, and I'm actually currently working with someone from my hometown in Socorro, New Mexico, who is undergoing the same Zelle scam with her Bank of America account. And Bank of America's MO is continuously the same. Apathy, you need to speak to the person who ripped you off to try to get your money back, so on and so forth. It's fucking ridiculous. After this brief promotional consideration, I'm going to get into this particular story. I'm going to give you my opinion on it. And then, of course, we're going to rehash some of the Zelle fun that we've had in the past. It's a ridiculous service that Bank of America and other banks introduced to make things easier, when in reality, customers are signing away their rights by opting into Zelle. And whenever someone scams you, guess what? You're shit out of luck. So after this brief promotional consideration from our friends at Headcount, we'll be back with some more, so please stick around. All right, everyone, I'm back with more Notorious Banker Podcast, and once again, thank you so much to our new sponsor, Headcount. Go to headcount.org/Spotify for more information on how to register to vote in your area. You know, the presidential election was last year, and the midterms are coming up next year, but you know what? There are some very important state and local elections where you live. Get the information on that, and get the information on how to register to vote by going to headcount.org/Spotify for more information, and do your American duty. It does not matter what side of the aisle you're on. Cast your ballot today. So our friend Zelle is back in the news today. Now, it was a local-only story to San Francisco, ABC7 over there in San Francisco. I do have a former coworker of mine living in the Bay Area. Shout out to Omar, one of the coolest people I ever worked with at Bank of America. It's a town that I've never been to. It's a town that I hear a lot about. It's a town I would like to visit, of course. You know, Bank of Italy became Bank of America in San Francisco. Wells Fargo's corporate headquarters are seemingly still there, although everyone wants to move the corporate headquarters to New York City because that's where their CEO, Charlie. We don't have any black talent. Scharf, the CEO of Wells Fargo, is headquartered, and he gets $30 million a year not to show up at HQ at Wells Fargo. San Francisco Giants, of course. Shout out Barry Bonds, the home run king. Yeah, I know a lot of people say he's not the home run king for various reasons. Well, guess what? 2001 was a magical year in my life. He had 73 home runs. I graduated from high school. It's a memory that I do cherish. Oh, and by the way, I sold his rookie card for $1,000 when I needed the money to go to school. So San Francisco, you know, holds a place near and dear to my heart, although I've never been for all those various reasons. But it seems like there's a lot of good reporting coming out of San Francisco, particularly a gentleman by the name of Michael Finney, someone I'm not familiar with because I'm not familiar to the local news over there in San Francisco. But I have seen him on Twitter before talking about the EDD, unemployment, California stuff. 30-year reporter in San Francisco. He's 7 on your side, which is, I guess, their consumer reporting thing going on there. Of course, every local station has something very similar in every market. But stuff like this is important, and human interest stories are important when it comes to victims of fraud, victims of scams. You know, I worked at Bank of America, so I've seen so many people scammed over the years. Some of it was their own doing. I've seen people who have, quote, met military men from overseas online, sent them their life savings, and they got swindled that way. You know, I don't feel horrible when that happens. I know that sounds wrong, because people should know the basics of what not to do on the internet and the red flags and all that stuff. And this story is going to have a couple of red flags here that seemingly people think that other people should know about, but I'll get to why that's not relevant here. But, you know, you've seen people, you've seen those stories with little old ladies sending money to people using Western Union because supposedly their grandson's in a prison in Mexico and they need bail money. There's a scam going on locally in Las Cruces where people are claiming to be part of the electric company. and you need to pay your bill or they're going to terminate your service. And they're going fucking door to door. They're actually going up to your door and say, hey, you owe us $500. And people are so stupid that they actually just pay the money out and they get scammed. There was this thing going on with Amazon gift cards, a way to get an Amazon gift card for free at CVS a few weeks ago. And, of course, me, Mr. Couponer, figured out a way to get three $25 Amazon gift cards for free. So I went to CVS, I went down to the store, and I did my thing over there to buy the gift cards and scan my coupon to get them for free. When they scanned the Amazon gift card at CVS, there was a disclaimer that showed up in the credit card machine, which basically said, you certify that you're not being victimized by someone. No one asked you to buy this gift card and to give them the number over the phone or online. And I'm like, goddamn, CVS is even part of a, hey, let's prevent fraud where we can thing, because I'm sure that they've seen people buy mass amounts of gift cards. And it's just very odd. Like, hey, why are you buying these gift cards for? Oh, yeah, my nephew's in prison in Mexico. And they said, instead of bail money, send Amazon gift cards. I am 38 years old. Of course, I have parents in their 60s. I have grandparents in their 80s. They are not the brightest people when it comes to, you know, the internet or whatever. And I do feel that they can fall for scams like this. And yes, the internet's been around for 30 years. We understand that. And people say, hey, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Well, that's a bunch of shit, okay? Because people are savvy. A lot of these places, a lot of these people who commit these frauds are very savvy people. So the gift card thing is kind of stupid, but there are people who know how to rip other people off. And it's just by acting as if. I had an old coworker years ago who was trying to teach me how to be self-confident. He just said, James, act as if you belong. Act as if you're the manager of Bank of America. Act as if you're the CEO. Act as if you belong here and you want their, you know, you want their business. Shout out to my old coworker, Brent. But, you know, it's a matter of whoever's committing the fraud can sound very believable. And I've talked to some of these fraudsters on the phone while in my Bank of America office while they're trying to scam my customers and calling them out on their shit. And they would hang up the phone the second that they knew that I was on to them. So I'm well aware of that. And all that knowledge, all that stuff over the years, and including, you know, 25 years of having the internet in my bedroom, has really helped me figure out what's real and what's not. And helping people on Twitter as the Notorious Banker has really, really been successful because of what I've learned over those 25 years. Now, a lot of people see how I help people with vigilante customer service on my Twitter account, and they're like, well, it seems too good to be true that you're trying to help me get my money back. What's in it for you? And sometimes that's a hard hurdle for me because, you know, I do work on contributions and donations to my project, but I'm not actively seeking that out. I'm doing this for my own peace of mind. I'm doing this to save my soul because I worked at Heartless Bank of America for 13 years and I've done a lot of unethical things in my life on behalf of that company, thinking I was going to move up the ranks when I was just, you know, chewed up and spit out like hundreds of thousands of people are at that company. But I have life experience and I have the knowledge to understand what's going on here. And like I said, you know, people on the internet, it's still growing, you know. The internet was a really important thing 20 years ago when I was still in high school, and there were people getting duped all the time. I remember the first time I thought, damn, people are gullible online, was when I discovered eBay. I was 16 years old, and I saw, you know, these online auctions for things that were just ridiculously overpriced. And I used to play tennis in high school, and I had a tennis racket that I bought for $40. And I claimed on my eBay post, my very first eBay auction, that this tennis racket I had was actually endorsed by Pete Sampras. Not autographed, but it was Pete Sampras's go-to racket whenever he won the US Open, so on and so forth. I weave this tale of just masterful words here, just saying, hey, this is the racket you need to get. And I sold this racket for $200. I remember the power that I felt. I was like, damn. All I did was just spin some yarns about how Pete Sampras holds a racket like this, and some idiot on the other end on eBay just said, yep, $200. I think it was the novelty of buying something online that actually kind of piqued the interest of those people. But at the same time, damn, what an idiot. Do your research. The internet was there to do research to see how much that racket originally cost. And I bought some Time Life CD set for $19.99. and I sold it as the full CD set, and there was over 100 songs. I said, you can only have this for only $1 a song, which was well over $100. I got it, and I made 5 times the amount of money on that CD set that I never listened to. It was like disco era 70s, 80s stuff. I don't know why the hell I bought it, but I did, and I made a shit ton of money doing it. That's why I knew my salesmanship was important. That's why I knew my gamesmanship was important. That allowed me to succeed everywhere. Notorious Banker, Bank of America, and in my dating life and in my personal life where I met the woman of my dreams and I married her. So all this stuff that I'm talking about leads to this story on ABC7News.com in San Francisco. Excuse me, the headline is School Nurse Falls Victim to Scam Targeting Bank of America and Zelle Customers. Now, with a headline like that, that's important because it spells out two things that I dislike totally, Bank of America and Zelle. Bank of America, of course, you know the reasons why I do not like that company after 13 years of working there, but Zelle is something that I despise. I remember the day Zelle was introduced to Bank of America. They told us to wear purple and they told us to hype this amazing new product called Zelle, where just you can use a phone number and email address to send money to anyone that you know and feel comfortable with across the country at no charge. I didn't really understand the breadth of why that was important back in the day until I figured out, hey, that's a way to eliminate people standing in line, doing wire transfers, so on and so forth. Basically, finding a way to eliminate services in a branch. That's what Zelle was. That's what Zelle still is to me. I'm going to read some of this story. I will link to it in the show notes here, and I'm going to just kind of spin my little opinions where needed. It says, a scam spreading across the country is targeting Bank of America customers, tricking them into sending money to fraudsters. I like the word fraudsters. It just reminds me of, you know, Hulk Hogan, oh, you little fraudsters, brother, through the popular Zelle payment app. It's only popular because it's everywhere. You know, if Zelle didn't exist, people would still find a way to send money. Guess what? There's Cash App. There's Venmo. It's only popular because the banks are basically mandating other banks to say, you need to have Zelle at your bank. A Bay Area school nurse was among the latest to fall victim, just as she was working to get students safely back to school amid the threat of COVID-19. Now, I mean, you know, yes, she's an essential worker. She's part of the education system. I understand that. But the victims are coming from all walks of life. I've seen college students. I've seen grandparents. So, you know, don't pile on to, oh my God, this is horrible that she got scammed. Because you know what? It's horrible any time they get scammed. So that was my only beef with this article here. The nurse who got scammed, her name is Paige Pollock. And she says, with the pandemic and kids coming back to school, yeah, it's crazy. I have 8 schools and I'm the only nurse, so it's a big job. Holy shit. You know, more power to Paige. That's all I got to say. Immersed in the task of getting schools open with an ever-changing pandemic condition, the last thing she expected was to be blindsided by a con artist. Quote, $3,500 is a lot of money to me, Pollock said. School nurses don't make a ton of money. This scam has been reported far and wide by thousands of victims across the country. I've outlined and basically showcased hundreds of those people that are on Twitter showcasing their victimhood to everyone. Now, Bank of America is warning customers as many scammers are posing as B of A representatives, helping them, quote, avoid a hack in their account. Now, I hate the word hack. And I hate that Bank of America uses the word hack like that. It's not hacking because there's no actual breaking into your phone, breaking into your computer. That does happen sometimes. And I've helped people who have had that experience before. And we've gone over the whole, oh, it was your IP address that sent this money shit that Bank of America used to use pre-pandemic in order to burn customers. But it's not avoiding a hack. It's someone calling and say, hey, we want to send, you know, we want you to verify your information and we want you to do this and that. And then that money ends up getting stolen. So it takes two to tango with that. So it's not just people hacking into your account. It requires you to pick up the phone. I'll get to that in a second. I saw Bank of America on the caller ID, so I thought, okay, this is legit. See, and I don't know how old Paige Pollock is. I'm sorry that I didn't see a photo of her. I don't know if I have a news story here that I can play while I'm talking to you, but all I can tell you is it's amazing how people just automatically assume that what's on the caller ID is, in fact, the gospel. and actually paused recording this podcast to see the news story again. And the woman, Paige Pollock, she seems to be in her late 40s, early 50s. So someone who, you know, didn't grow up with the internet at her disposal, I guess. So someone who's a little bit older, and yes, I'm only like 10 years younger than her or whatever, but someone who just has a little bit of years on me, doesn't have that, oh, well, hey, it says Bank of America on the call ID, it must be true. Keep in mind that 10, 11 years ago when smartphones first became a thing, I knew how to mask my phone number and show on the call ID on someone else's house that someone else was in fact calling and not yours truly. That's how you got people who didn't want to talk to you to talk to you by putting a fake number on there and saying, hey, it's not James the Notorious Banker calling, it's Pizza Hut or whatever, you know. So that is a naivete that a lot of older folks have. And frankly, you know, a lot of younger folks still have too. It still happens. And this is one of the reasons why I'm big on more interpersonal communication between banks and customers, because there's still a lot of things that people just don't know, and putting the fucking information on how to prevent getting hacked on a website that old people don't go to is a problem. It really is. So it says the imposter struck just as Pollock was running to catch a flight to Utah to visit her kids. So, you know, she's getting distracted and she's just agreeing to stuff, whatever. And it says, as she was getting dropped off at the airport, a text message popped up on her phone saying, Bank of America fraud alert. Did you just attempt a Zelle transaction of $3,500? Please reply yes or no. So I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't authorize a $3,500 transfer through Zelle. So I typed no. Immediately, her phone rang. The caller said, call ID said Bank of America, and she believed it was really her longtime bank. And a really friendly guy said, oh, so you didn't authorize this transaction? I said, absolutely not. She said, well, get your mobile app open and we're going to get your $3,500 back. The man told her to push several buttons on the Zelle mobile payment app. Now I'm going to stop right there. It's not a standalone app. It is the Bank of America app. And I've told you long before, their, quote, award-winning security on Bank of America's website and app is a bunch of bullshit, okay? Because this person knew exactly what to do and how to do it and how to make Paige do those things as well. So it don't put it on a Zelle independent app. It was Bank of America's app. Then he put her on hold. By the time I was panicked because I had to get my airplane. My flight was leaving and something about that call wasn't sitting right with me. As she boarded the plane, she grew more suspicious and opened up the B of A app on her phone. Sure enough, I looked at my account and $3,500 was gone right then and there. You see that $3,500 and your heart just sinks. She called B of A immediately from her seat on the plane. And I got put on hold for a million hours, and by that time the flight attendant yelled at me because I was on the phone and it was time to take off. She says she begged the flight attendant to let her stay on the phone to try to block the fraudulent transaction. She was really not empathetic at all, and I had to hang up. Now, that's a non sequitur right there, okay? Like, you know, I know there's rules about taking off and landing and your personal devices and stuff like that. But that's the thing. You know, we're so distracted in this world. Yeah, she caught a flight to Utah. She was distracted and she was busy. And scams don't just happen that way. Scams happen to people sitting in their underwear at home just watching TV. You know what I mean? The whole element of distraction, they don't know that she's boarding a flight to Utah. And I think, honest to God, that if she was not running to catch a flight, that same shit would have happened because of the naivete of the average customer getting duped like that. Nothing on Paige. That's millions of customers that have that issue. And one of the things that Zelle does, and I'll get to that in a second, is Zelle pretty much doesn't allow you to be duped without saying too bad, so sad. You know, like, basically, once you opt into Zelle, you're basically saying, if a crime is committed on me, I okayed it. Pollock had to sit tight for 2 anxious hours until the plane landed in Salt Lake City. Then she immediately called Bank of America and filed a claim for a return of her money. That's the whole thing. You file a claim for your money saying, hey, I called right away the second it happened, saying, hey, I didn't do this. And you know, of course, Bank of America wants you to be prompt. And the second you see something, call right away. Well, she did. She did as fast as humanly possible. And then a month later, the verdict arrived. Quote, sorry, you're out of luck, lady, she said. B of A denied her claim, and what really amazed her was the bank's reasoning. The notice said the, quote, payee did not approve the return of the money, and we, quote, recommend that you try to contact the person directly. Now, this is the fucking stupidest fucking thing, excuse my language, that Bank of America does. It's victim shaming, it's victim blaming, it's all on you. The whole point of the bank holding your money, and I know, you know, people who don't know banking say, oh, my money is protected by FDIC insurance. People think that their money is protected by this theoretical insurance whenever they put their money into their bank account. No, that's only if the bank fails, and even then it's kind of sketchy as to whether you're going to get your exact payout. There is no insurance on your money. So, you know, whenever the bank says, well, you know, we've got to deny it, and they didn't approve this. And whenever, you know, you send a Zelle, it takes two to tango. So the person on the other end has to agree that, yes, in fact, you were duped, and they'll send that money back. That's the reasoning. And if you read the terms and conditions, it basically says that you're fucked. It basically says that once you agree to terms, you have no other way of getting that money. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. So Bank of America knew that they were going to deny her, and that's the thing that pisses me off about it, is because they take every bit of that little 30 to 45 day period that it, quote, takes time to investigate your claim, and then they deny you on the very last day, and you don't really have wiggle room at that point, and you're out that money. I would rather, and I would be fine with this, if Bank of America said, yeah, denied the second that you filed the claim, like within 10 minutes of you filing the claim, because at that point, you know what, if they were really, truly, you know, honest and genuine, even though they're shitheads at the bank, they would say, oh, look at the rules. Once you agreed to terms, we're not responsible for any money lost. Have you ever been in a parking lot at the mall and it says, we're not responsible for stolen goods outside your car? They're not saying, hey, watch out, our parking lot is dangerous. They're just saying, I can't babysit you. There's 10,000 other fucking people out here. So what Bank of America does with their terms and conditions with Zelle is basically saying, hey, fend for yourself. If it doesn't seem right, don't do it. The problem with that is people are claiming to be Bank of America, shows up on the call ID, the person claims to be from Bank of America, and most people don't have interactions with Bank of America associates to know what sounds like a real associate and what doesn't. So those people are shit out of luck. They are screwed because they don't know any better. And that's the thing that pisses me off about the bank, because the bank should be more on top of these scams because they're using their name. Now, if it was just James, the Notorious Banker, stealing money through Zelle from all these unsuspecting people, and yes, I've stated as such. I'm not the most computer savvy person, but I know enough about the major bank dispute process that theoretically, if I wanted to scam $1 million, I probably could and get away with it, because I know that bank associates, I know the bank's claims department, do not give a shit about the average customer. But to have them say contact the person directly whenever that customer says, well, this was a fraud and they were claiming to be you, it makes no sense. And that tells me that they never looked at it once. They never even tried to look at it. And they have that information. I had someone get duped with Zelle one of the first months that Zelle was around at B of A. And I talked to someone in the online banking department, and she said, yeah, we can see IP addresses, we can see the location of the request, we can see the bank that it went to, but we're not allowed to give it to you as a banker, and we're not allowed to give it as a customer for, quote, privacy reasons, because Zelle, in you know, essence, works like as an escrow account. I send you $5, it goes through Zelle, and Zelle sends it to your Wells Fargo account. And no information is ever shared between the thing. It's theoretically supposed to be safer, but in reality, much like masking agents are used to mask steroids for track and field athletes, it's a masking agent for fraud. And that's what Zelle is. Zelle is a beard. Zelle is a beard. However, ABC7 alerted B of A that this was a fraud and not a legitimate transaction. And, you know, of course, Paige says, so they want me to contact the person who scammed me. And I'm like, who is that? How would I know? So ABC7 in San Francisco gets a hold of Bank of America, says this was a fraud. And then the next day, Paula got a call. Once bitten. I saw the phone ringing and caller ID said Bank of America. And I thought, I'm not falling for that trick again. And I didn't answer it. But this time it was real. Paula called the bank and found out that it had reversed its decision. And I said, so that means I get my money back? She says, yes. So I just started crying. I'm just beyond grateful, beyond appreciative, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Now, I hope this thank you is to Michael Finney and ABC7 in San Francisco, not to Bank of America, because Bank of America would not have refunded that money. Bank of America would have just said, oh, we're sorry that we couldn't help you more if this person said, hey, you know, I banked here for 20 years. I have $10,000 with your bank, and I'm leaving right now. They don't give a shit. They don't. I was told not to give a shit whenever a customer left. Because if a customer left, well, that's their prerogative. We don't lose anything because of that. And best case scenario, they'll see that the grass isn't greener at the other bank and they'll come back and we'll get more sales credit. That's what we're taught to do at Bank of America. That's what we're taught to do in banking, is what's new, what's next. And I've gone over a million times, and I'm going to get to that in a second, about how Zelle is horrible, how Bank of America and Wells Fargo, to some extent, are horrible with these fraud claims. And I'll get to why in a second here, but the story ends with the takeaway. A call from your bank might not really be your bank. Bank of America warns it would never call. Isn't that the fucking truth? Bank of America warns that it will never call. Yeah, they never call back. Yours truly, the notorious banker, promised to call back hundreds of clients over the days, weeks, months, and years that I was a personal banker. And I was told by my boss not to call people back because we couldn't discuss personal business on the phone. That's the true story. And ask you to stop a fraud by using the Zelle Money app. And once again, Zelle is... I hate the way that Zelle is presented as a standalone. Zelle is part of the Bank of America app. The whole fucking advertisement for Zelle is on the app. Zelle is Bank of America. Bank of America is Zelle. Yes, Zelle is its own company, Early Warning Services LLC in Scottsdale, Arizona. But Bank of America owns a part of it, as do other big banks. If you get such a call, hang up and call the bank directly using the number on your debit card or bank statement. And do what? That's the only thing that I don't get about this part. And yes, I understand. Okay, people who watch local news tend to be older, okay? And the victim in the story is in her 40s or 50s, and the reporter is in his 50s at least. And this is what I gotta say. Like, you call the bank directly and say what? I had a call that someone was pretending to be you. I promise you, Bank of America does not have notes that says, someone called pretending to be Bank of America to this person, so, you know, proceed with extra caution. Because the person sounded official enough on the phone anyway, so if you put that note on there, if there was a theoretical place to put notes on Bank of America's system, it does nothing. So her calling is actually going to just cause more stress. People calling are just going to cause more stress because you call and say, hey, someone called pretending to be you trying to get money from me. The bank's going to be like, well, don't talk to them next time. Okay. And there's not going to be any notes on your system. And even if there was notes and something did happen to you, they'd be like, well, seems like you like to answer your phone because you talked to these criminals before. They'll find a way to victim shame, victim blame you. That's just the way that they are. That's their fucking nature, and it's gross. Do not respond directly to the text or call that came in on your phone. And, you know, most people don't even answer their phone anyway. It's weird, you know? Like, I've had an iPhone for over a year, and I've probably got and received 15 calls in that year that I've actually picked up. The rest of them go to voicemail. Yeah, I'll call people, but I rarely get called, and then I pick it up. I wait for voicemail or a text saying, hey, I'm going to call you. That's just the way that it goes. But, you know, with Zelle and with this lady, I just feel so bad because I've talked about it so much. And I told you my first Zelle fraud story was in 2017 while at Bank of America. When it was introduced, I helped these customers from Turkey. And three of them came in. One of them was victimized with Zelle. And it was the first time I had heard of any fraud through Zelle because it just was brand new. I called online banking, and I swear to God, I was on the phone with online banking department for 3 hours, and they couldn't help this person. It was $600. They were college students. They needed that money, and Bank of America just did not want to help them. And I remember feeling like shit that I told these people that I couldn't help them after I said, hey, I'd be happy to help you in my office. And then I realized right then and there, something weird was going on with Zelle, because it made it seem like, and the person on the other end of the line just made it seem like, I was stupid for calling on behalf of Bank of America to this department on behalf of my customers. And then they were telling me, well, your customers should really try to contact the person on the other end and ask for the money back. I mean, imagine if the fucking cops did that. Imagine if you get pickpocketed, okay? I donate plasma on the, quote, bad side of town here in Las Cruces. And, yeah, there's some homeless people, and I work with the homeless. I give food. I give supplies to the homeless on a regular basis. That doesn't mean all of them are nice. Just, like, not every person are, you know, is nice. So if I get held up and I have a fucking knife to my neck saying, give me all your money now, I'm going to kill you, and I give them my wallet, I give them my possessions, and they run away, and then I go to the cops, and I say, hey, yeah, it was that one long-haired homeless guy who put a knife to my neck, and he has a shopping cart, and he also has a pink sleeping bag. So you know who he is. There's only one guy with a pink sleeping bag here. He's the one that threatened to kill me if I didn't give him my stuff. And then the police goes, well, you know, we can't recover the money because he might have spent it already. So what you may want to do is you may want to go back to him and ask him directly to please refund you. That's what basically fucking Bank of America is saying. And it's stupid. It's nonsensical. Bank of America pretends that it's the smartest, you know, the smartest people in the room. And I know this because it's me. I still think that way, even though I'm no longer a Bank of America employee. Yeah, I like to think that I'm the smartest one in the room when I walk in. That's just who I am, and that's just how they teach you over there. But the thing with it is this, okay? They want you to think that, hey, okay, we'll file a claim. We're going to try really hard to get your money back. And then leave you stringing along for a month or two and go, oh, yeah, we have to deny your claim. Oh, can I appeal? Can I talk to someone else? Nah, there's no one else to talk to. Unfortunately, you know, it's a final decision. And not everyone gets to go to the media. Not everyone gets to go to the media, and then the media says, okay, we'll take on this story and we'll help you. I know this because I've actually helped more people than I've seen people in the media help recover money for Zelle. And I know that's crazy. I know that sounds stupid, but it's true. A lot of my work has been, you know what, people don't know how to respond and they're afraid to be on the news and they're afraid to be on camera. So I teach them how to freaking needle at Bank of America to get the help that they need. And that's what I've been doing for 3 years. And of course, we've had people, Brian in Chicago, we had Jose. We didn't get his money back in Washington, D.C., but we put him on Telemundo in Washington, D.C., and we got a story out there. I've put three people on the local CBS affiliate in Chicago with Zelle scam issues that were going on. Two people got their money back, one person didn't. I have been omnipresent in Zelle scams, and I'm sure the reporter for this one, Michael Finney, has probably seen me on Twitter talking to these people with it as well. And I boasted about how I've got back money from Bank of America and Wells Fargo with these Zelle things, because the same story happens all the time. Bank of America blames you. Bank of America says, go talk to the criminal and get your money back. Bank of America says, we can't refund you. Now, the question, once again, is why? And I've answered this question maybe 50 times while doing this podcast, since I did this podcast. And the fact of the matter of that is this. Okay, so why doesn't Bank of America refund your money? Because if you did everything correct, if you reached out to the cops, if you reached out to the criminal, if you filed a claim, if you can prove that you weren't in on your fraud, the zero liability guarantee of banks basically says that all things being equal, we'll protect your money and we'll reimburse you if we spot fraud in progress. But also the judge of what's fraud in progress and what is actually legit fraud and not legit fraud is also the bank that is going to give you your money back. So they are your judge, jury, and executioner. So they're the ones that make the decision that you get your money back or not. Well, if they say, okay, well, it seems like fraud did happen, we're going to reimburse you, that's money coming out of Bank of America's coffers. That's considered what's called a policy loss at Bank of America, which basically the definition is all things being equal, this customer did everything they could to protect their money and they still got ripped off, and we did everything we could to protect their money and they still got ripped off, so we're going to give them their money back. And that's all well and good, but that still comes out of Bank of America's pocket, you know. And policy losses were bad words whenever I was working at a branch. So whenever I had a fraudulent check that I cashed, took a loss on it, thought I was going to lose my job, they saw that I took two IDs. They saw that I got the thumbprint. They saw that I did everything possible to protect myself and the bank from that loss through the services and the systems that the bank gave me in order to function. And it still happened, so the bank couldn't fault me because it would have happened to anyone. But someone who doesn't do those things can lose, and it's called a performance loss. And all the bank does have to reimburse the customer still at that point in time. The performance loss goes on that teller or that banker or whatever, and that person takes a loss and they can lose their job. Policy losses are all well and good, but it's basically, it's endemic that says that, hey, there's something broken with the online banking system, with Zelle, with all these things, because so many people are going through it. So it's easy for the bank to just, like, be a boxing judge and say, oh, now the other guy won. It's the other guy's decision. And that's what they basically do. They just basically say, nah, it wasn't fraud. And they don't give you your money back. Well, how fucked is that? I don't know what needs to happen. I know it's pie in the sky, but if there was some nonpartisan mediation thing that a customer can take a bank to task for these bogus denials of fraud claims, and that would be great, because people can look at the evidence or lack thereof that the bank tried to help their own client and then make a decision that the bank had to reimburse the customer. Yeah, that's a pipe dream, but I swear to God, man, it needs to be like that, because all the bank has to say is, yeah, we looked at the evidence and we deny you. You have no method. What are you going to do, call the cops on the bank for not giving you your money back? It's impossible. It's impossible to get your money back with the bank at that point in time, and that's basically why I do what I do. And I speak out on it very, very often, because if it wasn't for Michael Finney on ABC7 here, this lady would still be out her money. And she would close out her accounts. I'm never coming to this bank again. They don't give a fuck. They really don't care. And she could tell her friends, and will her friends close their bank accounts out? People say, yeah, I'll help you. I'll be in solidarity with you. But yeah, it's a pain in the ass to switch banks and direct deposits and stuff like that. So it's a meaningless gesture. I always tell people, if you're going to protest a bank, do it right. Because, you know, you can protest someone at a local branch in New Mexico, like where I worked at, and say, oh, the bank funds this and that. And yes, I understand. And in some cases, I agree with your plight 100%. But dude, I'm working here. This is an entirely different entity. You know what I mean? It's something that, you know, if I work at a McDonald's, you know, making, you know, Sundays with the McFlurry machine, that doesn't mean I need to know what's going on corporately with McDonald's, like their charitable giving or their, you know, their climate change initiatives and all that shit. Dude, I'm just the guy making ice cream. It does not affect me, because I still got to make the ice cream for the customers. And that's the thing with banks is, you know, she can protest the local bank all she wants, and she probably went to the local branch and they probably didn't even try to help her. And that's not their fault. That's just how they're taught. They're taught to work on sales. They're taught to not focus on stuff like that. The people on the other side of the phone will help. But the people on the other side of the phone also know that the people in the branch are taught that. So the people on the other side of the phone can be less and less helpful because they feel like they're the last line and there's nothing else that the customer can do to get their money back. And that's why she got screwed until she called the local news. A couple years ago, I went to Zelle headquarters in Scottsdale, and I broke in. I jumped the security area, and I had my wife take a picture of me in front of Zelle headquarters with a sticker from what this podcast was called before, Why Your Bank Sucks. And I just was like amazed. I'm like, this company handles $80 billion of the world's money every year, and I could just literally just walk to the front door and take a picture at the front door. I mean, it was stupid. I mean, and it just basically told me that it's all for show. It's all performance art. I really think that Zelle was whipped up so fast to compete with Venmo, to compete with Cash App, that they didn't really even think about the security features of Zelle, and people knew how to exploit the shit out of it whenever it came out. And that's a fact of nature. Yes, Venmo has scams too. Yes, Cash App has scams too. There's scams everywhere, and you gotta watch out. You gotta be careful. But it's notorious, no pun intended, that big banks rolled out this Zelle app. And it's actually probably the most dangerous thing that they've ever introduced, because that's lawlessness. Once that leaves Wells Fargo, it's not Wells Fargo's, you know, bag anymore. Once it leaves Bank of America, they didn't care less about where you sent your money. It's just a pass-through, and that's just the way that it's built, and it's a way to screw other people, and the crooks know that. Now, I started this segment earlier by saying, hey, older people are naive and stupid. Well, younger people are too. I've seen younger people get duped by Cash App scams, by Zelle scams and everything. Jose, the one in Washington, D.C., he's a young kid. He's 22, and he got ripped off. You know, it's so upsetting and so frustrating. So what's there to do? Well, I don't know. And it's only going to get worse, because as banks, seem less and less enthusiastic to provide just decent customer service to their customers face to face. We're going to see more of these people who just are just going to, you know, take a shot, so to speak, and basically get burned by these crooks because they have no way of vetting or verifying through their bank that this is happening and this is legit. And I think that that's going to be a really big issue. And do I think that banks want to correct it? Well, you've listened to this podcast before. I really think that banks don't care about this lower-end shit. They don't care if these customers leave. They want to deal with billion-dollar clients, million-dollar clients. Do they care if this nurse got ripped off of $3,500? No, because she probably doesn't have that much more money to begin with. So she's useless to them. She's maxed out, as my manager would say. We can't open up any new accounts for her, and then we're going to give her $3,500 back, knowing that we're never going to recoup that much in our investment in her. Fuck that. We're not going to help her deny her claim. It's the way it is at banks. What can I say? And yours truly, the notorious banker, has recovered over $500,000 in Zelle fraud denials. In, you know, claim denials that Bank of America especially has had with Zelle, where people are getting ripped off, and it's endemic. Like I said, it's really, really bad, and something needs to happen. And, you know, not to get political, but the current administration is not necessarily, you know, fuck the banks. You know, they're, you know, the joke was that, you know, our president was in the same state as MBNA, which is now Bank of America. So, you know, like I said, it's not, this is not a political podcast, but I'm just saying, I feel less enthusiastic about shit like this changing, because as the days and weeks go on, we see banks and banks care less and less about the average client, whether it's less tellers in a branch, whether it's, you know, 2-3 hour waits in telephone customer service, or whether it's these claim denials. There's always something going on that the little guy gets screwed on, and then there's basically nothing they can do, and these people are out a lot of money. I gotta give it up to Paige for being the nurse at 8 schools. Thousands of students, that's gotta be insane. And shout out to people like that who are trying to make a difference. Shout out to Michael Finney at ABC7 in San Francisco for helping her to continue her plight, to continue her duty to make a difference with the school kids of San Mateo, I believe they said that she was at. I believe that's where Aaron Rodgers, my favorite quarterback, is from. I don't know, I need to double check that. And a not-so-big shout-out to Bank of America for, again, nearly fucking over an essential employee at $3,500. Funny enough, I helped an essential employee get back $3,500 in New York City. Same thing happened. Bank of America denied his claim. He was also a Nigerian immigrant. And I really do believe that Bank of America denied his claim because they saw his Nigerian name and they think that he's some sort of Nigerian scam artist in an internet cafe somewhere. No, he was a nurse during the height of the pandemic in New York City, and the notorious banker worked hard to get that money back, and we kicked ass getting it back. And we proved that Bank of America is complicit in this horrible, horrible fraud situation going on in the world out there. And there are so many ways that, you know, people get defrauded, so you got to be vigilant with everything. I always use the analogy that, you know, how technology is going to succeed? Well, pornography figures out a way how to use it. You know, some say that the VHS videotape player would not have survived its first decade in operation if it wasn't for the adult film industry. Ditto internet, ditto everything else like that. And the thing with fraud is it's much like the adult film industry. People will find ways to screw the system, to steal money. We saw PPP loan theft. We saw unemployment insurance fraud. We saw so many things going on that just happened on the fly with all these programs on the fly where people got shit tons of money and they didn't earn it. Well, guess what? Zelle, and then it's the next one in line, next software that comes out that allows you to bank easier. There's going to be a way to fuck with it, and people are going to steal millions, and banks will do the same thing and deny you again. But the big difference is I think a lot more people in the media are hip to it, and a lot more people like yours truly, the notorious banker, are going to fight for the average customer. So once again, shout out to Paige, an essential employee. I'm glad you got your money back. And thank you to the media for paying attention to this. That's all I got to say. As I mentioned, it's going to be a one-topic podcast, so I'm going to wrap it up today. Thank you so very much for listening. You can email me at thenotoriousbanker@gmail.com or james@thenotoriousbanker.com. You can go to thenotoriousbanker.com for more information about yours truly. You can find me on Twitter at BankBetterGuy, at NotoriousBanker on TikTok. And contact me, 575-322-4127 is a voicemail line. I would love to hear from you. I actually got a really cool email with some telephone customer service calls that a customer gave me with Bank of America that frustrated the shit out of him. I should and will get permission to air those on a future podcast, so stay tuned for that. But I'll be back with another podcast very, very shortly, or as breaking news warrants. My friends, thank you so much for supporting my project once again. You can support it by subscribing to my Patreon at patreon.com/notoriousbanker. Contribute at least $1 to help me fight back against big banks. Or you could always Venmo or cash at me at TheBankerDude, T-H-E, BankerDude, all one word. And contribute to my project and allow me to fight back against big banks, although I do not accept evil Zelle. And I just want to close this podcast by saying, fuck you, Zelle. My name is James, the Notorious Banker, signing off. Thank you once again for joining me. We'll talk to you soon.